Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Broken Crown by Rachel Van Dyken, narrated by Alexander Sendes and Gillian Macy. Prologue. The trust of the innocent is the liar's most useful tool. Stephen King. King. Sometimes I wonder. Sometimes I think. Sometimes I ponder. Sometimes I drink. Is this normal? This anger? This disappointment? Maybe. 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 I twirl the whiskey glass in my hand and stare into the amber liquid. Why am I this way? Why do I need to feel so deeply, so desperately? Why am I broken? And why is the person that's been born to be the glue lost and unable to keep things together? I would love you for an eternity, I murmur, glancing at her across the room, watching her stare at me like it's going to make things better when we both know we're done. I would die for you, kill for you, I would bleed for you.
I don't need your blood,
she whispers as a tear runs down her cheek. I want to catch it, but what do you do when you catch someone else's tears? It's a metaphor, because at the end of the day, the tear disappears, and so does your fucking hope. My crown is heavy. My love for her is heavier. But I can't let her see me crumble, so I continue to stare, and I continue to give her a choice. And then I experience pain so searing, so horrible, that I wonder if I'll survive it as I say the words that will damn us forever. Go to him.
But...
her eyes close.
I know what this means for us.
I know, I say. But this is how our story both ends and begins. With you walking out that door toward him, and me carrying the weight of the families on my shoulders. Go.
King.
How funny, right? My name? King? As if I can control anything when it's all out of my hands when a happily ever after is a joke. I sniff into my drink. It's okay, though. It's going to be okay.
How?
I squeeze my eyes shut. Because I have no other choice. And neither do you.
I care for you.
No. Humiliated, I return my stare into my drink and find my voice cracking. You love him. Chapter 1. We loved with a love that was more than love. Edgar Allan Poe. King. The engagement party. No. That's all I really remember. That one word repeating over and over again in my head. Like sand sifting through my fingers, I am losing my grip on reality and on everything I thought I had control over. My life, my future, my soon-to-be wife, married. Had someone told me that I'd be having this conversation with my dad at my age, I would have laughed. Hell, last year I was fucking my tutor. Spoiler alert, it wasn't because I was failing math. Shit, Dad barks out the order. I will have zero choice over this. I know that, even as my ass hits the leather chair. But something in me still needs to fight it. Mainly because he doesn't know. My cousins do. My friends, they all know now, after I'd hidden it for a while. Super awkward, by the way, having that conversation with Maxim. But that's an entirely different story, apparently. I am fighting for peace in a world of nothing but war, and I am already exhausted as my dad stares me down and sighs. I squeeze my eyes shut. I can't let him see me break. I am the main heir, next to my half-uncle, in line to take over the five families. Now six. God, six. I still can't believe that we sucked in another family from Italy, completely pissing off the older families in Sicily by bringing someone else into the fold by way of marriage. I remember the day I found out we were combining the five families of the Cosa Nostra with yet another powerful family. I laughed, nearly feeling sorry for the poor bastard that had to sacrifice his dick on the altar of marriage to someone he didn't love. I shake my head at my dad before he can even get more words out. I'm not shaking my head at him because I'm rejecting what has to happen. I'm shaking my head because I still can't believe it's her. Anyone else, literally anyone else. This is the part of the story where you feel sorry for the poor bastard because he's marrying someone he hates, but my story's different. She's someone I love. I just wish she loved me back instead of him. My eyes squeeze shut. Maybe they're afraid to stay open because my dad will see too much. Nah, he'll see it all. Of course, the one time I'm ready to commit, it's to someone who wants nothing to do with me because she loves someone else. This is a last-ditch effort on my part to stop the world from spinning out of control, to stop myself from making the mistake of living a life where I know the person lying in bed next to me shares her heart with someone else, along with her body. Because what sort of sick bastard would I be if I kept her to myself when all she wants to do is give those pieces to someone else? Unrequited love sucks. It's not like in the movies where the girl finally sees the light, and that's the worst part. I know women find me appealing, but that doesn't really matter where the heart's concerned. Del, I think about her way too much, about our friendship, our secrets. And the day I reached for her hand only to have her jerk it away and shake her head slowly like she knew what she would eventually have to say to me.
No, she whispered. I like you, I really do, King. Maybe in a different life this could have worked, but this has to strictly be business. A transaction we both sign off on in order to keep the peace between the Baratti family and the Five families.
Stunned, I could only look at her and nod my head when everything within me was screaming, unfair! Unfair that everyone around me finds their happy ending. Unfair that I have to look at someone I'm falling for and tell her to kiss someone else. It's all unfair. It's fucked. And still, I put a ring on her finger. Still, I make promises in my heart and soul, wondering if I'll even last long enough to know what it's like to feel again. Dad sighs and runs a hand through his hair.
Look, I know this isn't ideal.
I snort. You're kidding, right?
King.
He swallows, then looks down at his folded hands.
The situation is precarious. The Baratti family has risen in power and they want in. They've made promises, and what's better is they're some of the best bodyguards I've ever seen.
I frown. What's that have to do with anything?
We have money, Dad says. They have soldiers.
I fall back against the leather chair. Are we short on soldiers?
After the cleansing of the Delange line, Dad says with a shrug, we lost a lot of people. And not just that. Our family keeps growing, and we need more men to put on the kids. We can't just pick some random people off the street.
So I'm marrying a girl who doesn't love me in order to make sure some foot soldier can follow one of my cousins around school and do their bio homework? It makes zero sense. He's hiding something. I lean forward. Dad, he sighs and checks his phone.
She's here. Be nice. Pour her a glass of wine and try to enjoy it.
Sure. I lick my lips. That's like asking someone to enjoy a root canal. Dad gets up and walks around his desk, then puts a hand on my shoulder and squeezes.
Tell me you can do this. Tell me you can not only be my heir, but unite the families. Tell me you won't rebel. For once in your life.
I put my hand on his, my words heavy. I won't fail.
Good. He nods. Very good.
His footsteps are heavy across the hardwood floor before I hear the door open and him call over his shoulder.
You have 5 minutes.
5 minutes until my life changes forever. 5 minutes to digest the shame that washes over me in panicked waves like I'm drowning in the ocean. 5 minutes to come to the conclusion that I will live forever in a loveless marriage, and that the one rule you're given once you say those vows is to never cheat on the woman you've sworn to protect. And yet I'll let her do exactly that, because I love her. In that single moment, I realize, in 5 minutes, I'll be celibate for the rest of my life, however long or short that may be. I'll never laugh over dinner and hold my biological daughter or son close and wonder if they look more like me or more like her, because I can't. I can't sleep with her knowing she's with him. So if she gets pregnant, everyone wins, and I get to help raise someone else's son as if he's my own. It's too heavy to think about. I want to vomit. Instead, I stare straight ahead at my dad's chair, knowing one day I'll fill it and that my sacrifice is for the greater good of the six families. It was always going to come down to this, wasn't it? I pulled the short straw. I closed my eyes. Inhale, exhale. It had to be me, because who else could it be? I had a sudden vision of grabbing the invisible crown off my head and setting it on fire. Instead, I feel its weight. I relish the pain, and I breathe. I have 1 minute left. I stand. I turn and face the door. I count my steps, and I reach for the knob, taking a reassuring breath and whispering, "Time for my engagement party." Nobody sees the tear that slides down my cheek before I open the door, just like nobody hears the sound of my heart breaking as it slams against the floor. I walk out of that room different,
I will never be the same. If I want to survive, I can't be. I'm King Campisi, and the cross is almost too much to bear.
Chapter 2. Believe nothing you hear, and only one half that you see. Edgar Allan Poe. Del. I'm so nervous, I want to puke. King still hasn't shown up. I know this is one of those days where we have a serious talk about what our future looks like and how things are going to work out. It's going to get complicated, but he did promise me. He promised nothing would change. And it was the only promise I needed, that I could still love Roman. Even though I knew we couldn't get married now, at least I could have him. He'd been so pissed when I gave him his ring back. And then he'd cried, gotten drunk, yelled, apologized, then asked if there was any way we could run away together. Instead, I ran toward King. It was the only way to save my family, and the only way to strengthen theirs. Everything was a power play, and we were nothing but pawns in that game. I asked my uncle a week ago if I had a choice. He seemed so confused by the question itself that I already knew the answer. As he stared at my left hand, my engagement ring burned on my finger. When my dad died, when my other uncle died, I knew in my soul I would take over my family. Until my last uncle rose up and took the throne. Now I'm screwed. Now my life is not my own. My story is already written. I never imagined when I said yes to Roman that I would, a week later, be handing back that small diamond ring and telling him that I couldn't marry the pauper anymore. No, I was marrying the prince himself. Roman had grown up poor. His dad was still working on becoming a made man. We met by accident, Roman and I. We met when I got in a fight with my boyfriend at the time and ran across my yard and tripped, nearly landing head first in one of the gorgeous fountains on my father's property. Roman caught me when I stumbled, and I swear my world went into slow motion as he twirled me in his arms and looked down at my face. Not the intro I was waiting for, but I'll take it. He winked, and I nearly died. He had jet black hair, the bluest eyes I'd ever seen, and his smile was devastating as he set me on my feet and announced, "One day, I'm going to propose to you at this fountain." He tilted my chin toward him, "And you're going to say yes." "Who the hell are you?" I jerked back. He shrugged, "Your future husband." Then he held out his arm. "Want to go for a walk?" And that was it. Literally. We saw each other every day after that. Until I gave him his ring back. His dad recently died, and now Roman was a captain for my family, the Baratti family, working his way up to a made man and more. I am so damn proud of him in his black suit as he stands next to my uncle, staying close just in case someone tries to carry out another ridiculous assassination attempt. Lately, it seemed like everyone was trying to kill my family. My long-lost uncle was powerful in Sicily, but here in the States, here, people just wanted what he had, which was control over several of the cities in Italy. He had more power than local authorities, and all because he cared about the people. But he got hungry. So hungry. Mom died. Dad changed, then died. And my uncle, he followed suit. Until the final heir rose to the occasion. The uncle that never really gave a shit and took the crown I was owed. After all that work, all that blood, I still ended up being a pawn in a game I never wanted a part of. My uncle suddenly wanted more than cities. He wanted it all. And there I stood, helping him. Taking a ring off my finger and replacing it with a heavier one. Because what freaking choice did I have? do I have? Roman looks over at me and nods his head once. I jerk my chin toward the bathroom. He blinks slowly. I don't need anything but him. Nearly falling off my heels, I make my way to the bathroom, open the door, and step inside. Then I close the door and wait for his knock. He knocks twice. I jerk open the door, grab him, and pull him in, kissing him as he lifts me onto the counter and spreads my legs wide so he can walk between them. I missed you, I say between kisses. I'm dying for you. Where's this king guy anyway? Late. I kiss him harder. I know it sounds weird, but you'll like him. Plus, we came up with a sort of arrangement. Doesn't matter. His grip tightens on my ass, fingers digging in. You're mine. Yours, I promise. I swear. I speak it out loud, willing it to be true until my voice is hoarse. King is great, but Roman is my forever. My lips are swollen when we finally stop kissing. I have no lipstick on them anymore, but don't care as we sneak out of the bathroom a few minutes later. Roman goes back to my uncle's side. I walk to the bar and grab a glass of wine. The room stills as King enters and slowly makes his way through the crowd. And he honestly does look like a king in his black suit, clear blue eyes, chiseled jaw, and messy hair. Yeah, he looks like a king you don't want to piss off, but one you so desperately want to get to know. In another life, he would have been perfect for me. In another life, I would have been perfect for him. I shoot a glance toward Roman, and I know the minute he sees King, because his entire demeanor stiffens while his skin pales, as though he's seen a ghost. King smiles at people as he walks through the crowd, and finally stops in front of me, towering over me by at least 6 inches. I look up and try not to gasp. He's almost too striking to be pretty, and yet, he's beautiful in his own terrifying way. He's like a historical romance novel all in one package, with the way he stands, walks, stares like you can't tell if he's entranced or pissed off. Hey, I whisper. He cracks a smile, reaches for my hand, kisses the back of it, then says, hey. I smile, despite my nerves. And then he says something I never expected in a million years. Why don't we go meet the soon-to-be bride's new bodyguard? Sure, I shrug. I just assumed it would be a Campisi, maybe Dom. I frown. No, Dom has better things to do. Axel? I'd probably drive him crazy and make him... I quit talking when we stop in front of Roman. King's calm and collected as he drops my hand, leans in, kisses my cheek, then whispers, be happy, Del. My mouth drops open. Roman stiffens, his face blanching to the point it resembles kindergarten paste. I thought I was guarding some new spoiled princess. King laughs and turns to me.
Is this the part where you raise your hand?
I slap him on his ridiculously tight stomach. Very funny.
Meet your new assignment,
King says to Roman, leveling him with a glare.
She dies. I slit your throat, rip the rest of your head from your body, and feed it to the pigs out back.
You guys have pigs? I ask.
Long story.
He sighs.
Long, long story.
He swallows and looks between us.
I'm going to go get a drink.
I shouldn't watch him walk away, but I do. Because he just gave me a rare gift. My freedom. But at the cost of him walking into that prison cell, turning the key and tossing it away. Be happy? But what about him?
Chapter 3. Science has not yet taught us if madness is or is not the sublimity of intelligence. Edgar Allan Poe. King. I'm an idiot. Like, a complete idiot. I have nothing coursing through my veins, unless you measure the blood and ask how much of it pumps for her, burns for her. I have zero things left in my arsenal, so I give up. No, fuck that, I don't give up. I give her what she needs, what she says she wants. My soul feels like it's scraping my insides as I watch her walk out of my house, the house I'll most likely inherit when I become the new capo. Del strolls outside like my heart isn't ready to snap like a rubber band in my chest, slamming against my insides, causing internal bleeding. She looks up and her green-eyed gaze takes in the stars while I watch like a complete fool. My body tells me that she wants me. My heart tells me that we have a chance. My brain, however, jolts us back into the reality we now live in. I'll marry her because that's my duty as the next capo of the families, but love? It was never for me. And why should it be? What amazing thing have I done to deserve to have the sort of love my cousins have? My best friends? They all sacrificed, and this is being fucking handed to me on a silver platter with gold oven mitts and diamond-encrusted decorations. It's not the same. Not that I want it to be. Maybe I just thought my journey would still include something epic. I almost laugh because, yeah, bullshit. I'm literally hiding behind a giant-ass oak tree watching Del like a friggin' stalker as she looks up at the sky while Roman comes up behind her. I keep my growl back. Not gonna turn into a werewolf, so why worry everyone that I'm going crazy as he wraps his arms around her middle, resting his chin on her head? My hands shake at my sides as her smile matches his. I'm going through absolute hell while they experience heaven. I swallow the lump in my throat and try to take a few deep breaths. I'm the next capo, after all. I can't be weak or show weakness, so I know I only have a few human moments left before I give them my back while they most likely kiss under the stars, and I walk back into the house to do my job. My job is my life now, my lover, my past, present, future. She's just a girl I'll put a ring on and smile with during family dinner while everyone else has kids, experiences passion, fights, chaos. I'll sit there with a perfect smile on my face and pretend that everything's perfect. And at night, I'll stupidly dream of a world where the person I married looks at me the way I've always secretly looked at her. How fun. A future of self-inflicted torture. Can't wait. Eyes still closed, Del stays that way like he's her center, when all I've ever wanted in the last 6 months is to take that position away from him, even though I know I haven't earned it. Does it matter, though, in the end? When she's his? He's hers? No. Every part of my body tells me no. Even the beat of my stupid heart seems to take up the cadence. Nope, doesn't matter. Because no matter how many gifts I shower her with, how many compliments, the heart wants what it wants. Mine wants hers. Hers wants his. 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2. I smile and lower my head. Then I give them the privacy they deserve. Her and her bodyguard. Keep her safe, I whisper. With your life, Roman. And I hear the whisper of his promise in the wind answering, I will.
Chapter 4. Words have no power to impress the mind without the exquisite horror of their reality. Edgar Allan Poe. Del. I've grown up knowing I'd eventually be a pawn. I don't hate my family. I just don't love them, either. But Roman's always been there for me since the beginning of me attempting to go against my father. It's been months, and it feels like years. Now, he's here with me, seriously, as my personal bodyguard. For King to do that, knowing what I know about him. I shake my head as Roman rests his chin on top of it. We should go in soon. His whisper wraps around me just like his arms. I feel safe, secure, beautiful as I exhale and enjoy the moment. I know. It was kind of him, he finally says. I don't want to talk about King because then I feel guilty. He's strong, one of the strongest guys I've ever met other than Roman. So part of me feels horrible that his new reality is watching the man I love stand by my side, even after King says his vows to keep me forever. I'm resolute, though.
I've sacrificed everything for this family, for this life. I'm going to keep this one thing for me, especially since my fiancé freely gave it. King's gaze has always been filled with lust, with barely restrained passion. I always chalked it up to the fact that he slept with everyone that gave him a sidelong glance. Then, when I got to know him, I found out that there was so much more beneath the surface. We all have a freaking part to play. And he plays his beautifully. One might say he acts like a playboy during the day and a monster at night. And they'd be correct. The first time I saw him come home with blood on his hands, I did a double take. The bosses were all sitting around for a quick meeting. His dad, Tex, the capo, stood and simply asked, "Is it done?" "I need a drink." King winked and then slammed a bloodied knife onto the table in front of everyone. Even my uncle jumped.
"Oh yeah, and it's done. Took a few minutes, though, to get some of those fucking bones broken, but he's very cheerfully stuffed into a suitcase with a one-way ticket to the bottom of Lake Michigan."
"Damn,"
Phoenix had chuckled under his breath. The man never chuckled. And once again, the five families proved to the ones trickling in from Italy, mine included, the Baratti family, that they meant business and that if we wanted any part of what they had, sacrifices must be made, me included. I shudder.
"Are you cold?" Roman asks.
"No, no." I lick my lips and think back on that moment again. King's green eyes had met mine with raw lust. Everything had slipped from his gaze as he looked, as he wanted, as he told me with his eyes that the best way to end that night would be with me, naked and screaming beneath him. His lips curled up into an amused smile before he crooked his finger toward me. I followed, like an idiot, down the hall. We walked until we came to one of the many large guest rooms. He closed the door behind him, locking us in.
"You were staring."
I was curious. I licked my dry lips again, lying through my teeth. I knew this guy. I worked with him. It was my job to infiltrate. But this felt different.
"You know who I am."
"I know who you are," he snapped back, his expression hard. "The question is, do you know who I am? Who I really fucking am, Del?"
"The heir."
"Fucking royalty."
He was trying to scare me, his typical MO. I lifted my chin. His smile was more amused than angry.
"Not that you care."
"Couldn't give a shit," I said out of the blue. He barked out a laugh.
"And yet, I feel like servants should always bow. Maybe it's just me, but isn't that respectful?"
My breath hitched. "Roman, think about Roman. We weren't together at the time, but still, I love him, right? I love him more than anything. And yet, every part of me needed something. Something more in that moment. Something forbidden. I found myself falling to my knees instantly." King's eyes lit up.
"See, isn't that better?"
"Go to hell."
"Oh, I live there already, but thanks for the directions. Do you take a left near self-loathing, or is it a right at depression and a drinking problem?"
"Maybe it's straight," I challenge. "Through silver spoons shoved up asses and saying yes all the time?"
"Oh, are we shoving things up asses now?" he teased.
I gasped.
"Cute."
He tilted my chin up at him, then tilted his head in such a predatory way I immediately got scared.
"So, how will you serve me?"
I was about to call his bluff when I heard footsteps.
Del, are you back here?"
It was my uncle. Fear slithered up my spine and down again. King must have seen it because his mask slipped. Teasing replaced anger and authority as he stomped over to the...
Sample complete.
Ready to continue?